Hello and welcome to In the Balance from the BBC World Service. I'm Ed Butler. Today you find me at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, known as CHOGM for short, this week taking place in London. Delegates milling around me as they emerge from the morning session at this splinter event, the Commonwealth Business Forum. 53 nations are represented here, the states of the Commonwealth, this legacy of British Empire, as some see it, all the more significant for Britain at the moment, of course, with the UK's imminent exit from the European Union. But what do events like this achieve in trade terms? And how relevant is the Commonwealth anyway? A panel of guests are going to be discussing this with me later. But first, I've been speaking to Ghana's Trade and Industry Minister. His name is Alan Cheramatin.
Increasingly, you see a sense of revival and freshness about the Commonwealth. I'm not exactly sure what is inspiring this. Is it a post-Brexit revival, or is it that either by chance or design, the Commonwealth now is beginning to appreciate its own intrinsic value? So CHOGM this year is coming at a very opportune moment.
One of the, causes for optimism perhaps is the recent agreement signed by a number of African nations about regional trade. Essentially, 44 African countries, not all of them members of the Commonwealth, I guess, but many of them are, have signed up to improve trade within Africa. I mean, how much difference would that make to you, for example, as a Ghanaian exporting nation?
The dream of a united Africa has been the vision of all our leaders, right from the first president of Ghana, Kwame Nkrumah. When Kwame Nkrumah started talking about the Union of Africa, it was more within the context of Africa helping each other and working together to achieve political independence and liberation.
That is the dream, but we've had 6% or higher tariffs, I mean really high tariffs between African nations. So in trading terms, it's been very hard to achieve that dream.
Yes, but so as I was saying, that was the original objective of integration of Africa. Now, with Africa becoming more politically liberated, the obvious progression is towards economic integration, economic independence, interdependence. And that is why the signing of this continental free trade agreement is an absolutely critical element in terms of how we move together as a continent. Yes, it is true. Africa, in terms of our markets, is the least integrated compared to Europe and North America and Asia. But the point is that now that sense of making and taking advantage of our markets, our integrated markets, this is what has culminated in this free trade agreement.
Ghana's Trade Minister, Alan Cheramatin. Well, also here at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting are all kinds of business and trade representatives from all across the 53 countries looking to cut deals and form relationships. Here's what some of them had to say to us.
My name is Tony Eko. I'm co-founder and executive director of the Sahara Group, a Nigerian conglomerate in the energy business. The world is changing, and it's changing because we've always known that it's been a global marketplace, so they say. And the Commonwealth has all of these countries that you can trade if you really understood what trade was, and you could do it across borders with technology today. And so what you're finding now is that the Commonwealth is actually looking at business to help drive trade, looking at business to help drive collaboration, looking at business to help drive the unity that the Commonwealth was meant to bring. And so that's what it's doing. So for the first time, I'm seeing business and government sitting side to side and working out exactly what free trade means.
My name is Rakesh Bharti Mittal. I'm the president of CII, Confederation of Indian Industry, and vice chairman of Bharti Enterprises. We are into the business of telecom, financial services, agri and food, and one of the largest skilling companies in India. To my mind, a bilateral trade of $18 billion between India and UK is too small. The potential is huge. I think we need to seriously engage the businesses and the governments on both sides. There are many areas where India is opening up on infrastructure, smart cities, defense, food processing. So can India and UK start talking to each other? Because whenever Brexit happens, we need to see what will be the impact. But I believe there are going to be huge opportunities for Britain to engage with India, being one of the largest economies within the Commonwealth. I think both countries can also play a very vital role in ensuring that the intra-Commonwealth trade, which is at about 550, 60 billion today, moves up to 1.5 trillion by 2020. So I think both India and UK can play an important role in this.
My name is Shalom Lloyd. I am the founder and managing director of Naturi Tribal Skincare. The core of our products or ingredients is shea butter, which we import from Nigeria. I mean, we just launched February of last year. The awareness and the visibility we're getting by being Commonwealth Export Champions is amazing. It seemed to have opened doors. It seemed to have paved the way for trade. Normally, when people talk about trading with Africa, they don't actually say trade. It's normally aid. But this is genuine trade with Africa. I'm British Nigerian, very proud of that, and represent the two Commonwealth countries that we actually trade in. And our products are now exported or bought by customers from across the globe. So Commonwealth Export Champion has really been a catapult for us from zero to 100.
A flavour of the range there of the delegates, big and small, at this week's Commonwealth Business Forum, part of the wider Heads of Government meeting. And it is close to that Heads of Government meeting where we've now moved to the illustrious surroundings of Marlborough House here in the heart of the West End of London, replete with extraordinary artworks and tapestries, a 300-year-old building and nerve central of the Commonwealth organisation. Let me introduce my guests who are around me here in this room. Dr. Christian Cardona, Minister for the Economy, Investment and Small Businesses in Malta, one of only two countries to be both in the EU and the Commonwealth once the UK leaves next year. Sir Kenneth Olisa, founder and chairman of Restoration Partners, a technology-focused merchant bank. Also, he's chair of Interswitch, Africa's biggest e-payments company. Rahul Merchandani, chair of Aries Agro Limited, an Indian agro business. And lastly, but definitely not least, Amy Jadasimi, CEO of Ladol, a free trade zone in Lagos, Nigeria. Amy, do you share that warm, fuzzy glow that we were hearing there from some of those people? What does an event like this, an institution like the Commonwealth, offer in terms of trade?
I think there's tremendous potential for the Commonwealth to become more than it has been. It's obviously an opportunity driven by the Brexit situation, but also there are changes for the Commonwealth countries. The ASEAN region is moving ahead very rapidly to have their own free trade zone, and Africa's view on trade has also evolved, as has our ability to participate equitably in any kind of trade region.
Right, we're going to come to more of that in a second, but what do you think, Christian Cardona, a country like Malta, what are your opportunities at an event like this?
Well, I think that Malta is one of the smallest sized economies which are very independent in international value chains. Trade, of course, is a source of growth and wealth creation, so small economies like ours need definitely to be connected to third country markets, given that our market is small. A study commissioned by the Royal Commonwealth Society shows that Commonwealth countries traded around 4 trillion worth of goods in 2008. The value of trade between pairs of Commonwealth countries, member states, is between 38 and 50% higher than between pairs of countries where one or both are not Commonwealth countries, Commonwealth members. So our objective is undoubtedly to reaffirm the commitment of Commonwealth member states to a transparent, fair and multilateral trading system.
Indeed, and we have had some very bullish predictions, haven't we, this week about the increase in Commonwealth, inter-Commonwealth trade in the next couple of years, Ken Olisa.
what has to be appreciated is much of the conversations about trade deal with relatively simple goods, and no disrespect, but fruit or resources or whatever. Yet the modern world is heavily tech-focused.
As you are.
And I am entirely tech-focused. And so much of the conversations I've enjoyed over these few days have been people talking about the knowledge economy and services. And the whole world of trade changes fundamentally when you can move something electronically from A to B and add value in that process. And what we will require in the Commonwealth, I think, is some more entrepreneurial thinking of the 21st century rather than looking back to how we used to do trade and trade barriers and dealing with those in the 19th.
Rahul Merchandani, you are, agribusiness, that's not tech. What are your trade opportunities?
Well, there are tremendous opportunities. I think the agriculture is one of the biggest trade opportunities here in the Commonwealth. You know, we are very concerned about, in Asia, for instance, the level of trade within the Commonwealth Asia region is minuscule. And the biggest opportunity in our backyard is knocking at us, and all of us are agribusiness companies. So what we were discussing, in fact, only yesterday in the agriculture forum within the Commonwealth heads of government meeting discussions, was that we should have standards that allow countries to actually move their goods and services in agribusiness across borders. And I think if we open up the borders for agriculture trade by putting up standards, by ensuring that the norms are very clearly stated well in advance, farmers will actually be able to double their income significantly better. And I am on the Prime Minister's panel in India on doubling farmers' income by 2022. And this is something that we are very, very keen on doing within the Commonwealth system.
Okay, let's just time to kind of look at the big picture then for a second. Free trade, it's an era we're living in now, I guess, of threatened trade wars, increasing protectionism around the world. It seems like a clarion cry that everybody can easily agree on, but are we making a bit too much, perhaps, of this idea that somehow free trade's going to fix everything? Ken Alisa.
No, free trade is, I think, along with democracy, the other engine that allows societies and communities to live together. So, no, free trade is really important. Unfortunately, free and trade are two defined terms and probably need a little bit of unpacking. Free means free, liberated from unnecessary value-reducing barriers, whatever those happen to be. And trade means the exchange of value between two people. It's sort of obvious, but a lot of trade in the past hasn't been that. It's been taking things at very low costs from somebody, leaving almost no value behind for the producers, and therefore there's no link between the consumers on the two sides of the coin. And I don't want to become entirely focused on technology, but as Rahul has just talked about, he's talked about agri goods and services. And free trade can be frictionless if you can start to do things electronically rather than physically. What does that mean? I understand something like a third of production in the Commonwealth, food production, is lost in transit in the fields because of bad weather and so on. And the antidote to that is, of course, services. It's knowledge, it's information, it's data, etc.
It's also better roads and refrigeration. I mean, it's all kinds of things, though, right?
No, it's lots of things, but a lot of it is to do with knowledge. It's to do with market prices, it's to know where goods and where goods are, the status of those goods, managing them properly. Yes, of course, the antidote to that is better transport, better refrigeration. But if you know where something is, you can make a decision about it.
Amy Jettasimi, we're hearing again about all of this. We heard from Ghana's trade minister a moment ago saying that this Pan-African Free Trade Agreement could be signed by every nation across Africa. That's going to be a great move for Africa itself. Nigeria hasn't signed it, though.
Yes, I think Nigeria, I can't speak for the government. For the private sector in Nigeria, we're in favor of a free trade agreement. But let me add a couple of ingredients to the discussion we're having this morning. One is for African countries, particularly Nigeria, trade has to be based on trade of finished goods. That implies we need more local content, so we need local manufacturing, and we need to service the local market more through those finished goods.
Exactly, but what that means is that basically at the moment, Africa is by and large trading things like minerals, raw agricultural produce. It sends them mostly to Europe or China or somewhere where they are processed and enhanced, so the value is not really returning to the continent.
Exactly. So the first thing we need to do if we're going to move forward as a Commonwealth is have an equitable trading arrangement that generates mutual prosperity, which builds on the comments that have already been made. The one thing I would add to that, though, is clearly to do this in countries like Nigeria, we do need to build infrastructure, facilities, and human capital, which we're in the process of doing. Doing that is easier to do when you have contracts for those finished goods to be delivered throughout Africa or throughout the Commonwealth.
Dr. Cardona, how does Malta see all of this? Because we're at this moment of Brexit, which is obviously driving a lot of the British chat this week. Britain is desperate to find new trading relationships to replace those it has in Europe. Where are you going to sit as an ongoing member of the EU and a member of the Commonwealth?
Well, I think that the Commonwealth provides a network of many countries with expertise in various fields. So the Commonwealth factor, you know, as Amy has said, the fact that you have understanding how the shared values of the Commonwealth, as well as the language, the institutions, similar legal and regulatory systems, etc., make average trade costs about 19% lower between Commonwealth countries.
But with Malta, for example, if the Commonwealth were to become a free trade area, which is being talked about, another free trade area amongst those that we have around the world, how would that work with you as a member of the EU? Because there are existing barriers to that relationship.
Well, as you know, in instances of negotiations of free trade, the Commission of the European Union has the mandate to negotiate together with Council any trade agreement with third countries or with other regions. So in that case, we will have to do that as full members of the European Union, very similar to what was happening with TTIP, very similar to what has been concluded with Canada in CETA, and what is happening now with countries like Australia, New Zealand, Mercosur and ASEAN countries.
These are all the regional free trade deals that are going on, and those are being seem to be proliferating. We've heard about ASEAN already, which is another one within East Asia. Another one we're talking about right now, Rahul, of course, we have been talking about in recent months, is this idea of a free trade bilateral agreement between India and the UK. But again, I'm going to be devil's advocate. The big problem in that one has always been this free movement of people. That was the criticism, right? India would love to see far greater access for individual Indians and business people to travel to and fro the UK. And clearly, for a lot of people who voted for Brexit, the idea of that free influx of people potentially from a hugely populous nation is seems very threatening.
Well, in fact, the free trade agreement, one of the critical challenges was immigration. And I think that's something that's going to remain a challenge while the negotiations go on. Of course, I can't speak for the government again, but I think as an individual, we created the Commonwealth Alliance of Young Entrepreneurs 6 years ago. And one of the biggest things that we've advocated in our communiques is a Commonwealth business visa that allows people to just move and talk and trade. Unless you talk to each other, meet each other, you can't trade. What's the purpose of all the discussions if, as an entrepreneur, I have to wait 3 months to go and meet a customer in a country because of visa restrictions. Now, if these are things that can be eased up, immigration may not be needed because India is really the hotbed of all activity right now in the world, and people want to remain there and be part of that burgeoning economy.
Amy, I mean, briefly, is that an issue for Nigerian business people?
I think it's an issue for all low-income, high-growth countries, but I completely agree with Rahul's point. This isn't about moving people. It's about creating partnerships, and to create partnerships we have to be able to sit down around the same table.
You're listening to In the Balance from the BBC with me, Ed Butler, and my guests from Malta, the Economy Minister, Dr. Christian Cardona, from Nigeria, Amy Jadasimi, from the City of London, Sir Kenneth Alisa, and from India, Rahul Merchandani. Now, to a cheery story, which we picked up. It was one of the myriad strange little tales that you get here at an event like this. Jane Hazel McCosh, she's the owner of a stately home in Cumbria in the north of England and produces and sells marmalade. They run an annual worldwide marmalade festival and award with a Commonwealth twist to it.
The marmalade competition has developed over the years, and the way it works is that we have a website which people can go to, and there are two kinds of competition, the homemade competition and the commercial competition. The commercial competition is about the small artisan producer who isn't a big producer, who's making marmalade by the open pan method and producing marmalade locally. And they put in their marmalade and we will judge it and we will award them a standard. So it could be a gold, silver or bronze standard. And as a result of that, they can then use it in their marketing themselves for their product. But this year we decided we wanted to celebrate the Commonwealth, and we had the great honour of His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales tasting the winning marmalade, the Indian marmalade, which he, I believe, did like very much indeed. So we did feel that we wanted to celebrate the Commonwealth, and because we're part of the Commonwealth cohort, we also feel we're very much part of this family now, and it is like a huge world opening to us with marmalade at its centre.
Well, there you go. From planned global tech disruption to Dalmain marmalade. Who knew preserves could be such a part of our chat today at Chogham? The thoughts of one type of CEO. Let's turn to some others. None other than Africa's leading young CEO, recently anointed, Amy Jadasimi. Congratulations on your recent award. When we consider these small and medium-sized businesses and this matrix of global trade, I mean, how does it work? How does it work for the smaller firms operating in a place like this?
So firstly, we have to recognize the important role they play. We need to create, by the World Bank's estimate, 680 million jobs. 80% of those jobs are going to be created by small and medium-sized enterprises. So we need to transfer wealth to those enterprises. In order to transfer wealth, there has to be an economic imperative. Fortunately, we have in the UK a huge imperative because we want to increase trade. You increase trade by creating more prosperous people who can buy your services and goods. And you do that, firstly, by investing in those countries and those people.
Rahul Merchandani, you come to an event like this. I mean, obviously, you're part of a delegation. You're not just operating on your own. But how does it feel wandering around with members of governments and so on around you and sitting at similar tables?
Well, it's an exciting discussion because, you know, we all have a common voice on the same table. I think one of the things that we gain from these kind of events is that young people, as well as entrepreneurs, business people, policymakers, all sit around and actually discuss common issues that affect all of us. When we began the Alliance of Young Entrepreneurs, which I founded, we found that there were five key issues that remained common across the Commonwealth, no matter where, in which level of evolution the countries were from. People are dealing with the same issues. They're dealing with access to finance, dealing with skill problems, education, taxation, regulation. So if you look at these issues, there are solutions found somewhere in the Commonwealth. And if we sit across with these kind of individuals, you can understand, learn from them.
Kenneth Alisa.
Well, I'd like to come at this from a slightly different angle. Size is important in this context, and lots of small businesses are better than lots of people doing nothing and being unemployed. But there's another lens to look at it, and it's one I rant about frequently, which is the difference between the executive culture, as taught by most business schools, and the entrepreneurial culture. The difference between being an aircraft carrier captain, where your future is dictated to largely by what happened yesterday and in the last mile, and a fighter pilot, where you don't care about the past other than for the lessons learned. What you care about is the future, and obviously surviving in the future. And what we see around the world, driven, I think, largely by the American Silicon Valley phenomenon, is this entire new generation of people. The age is not the point here, but the new generation of people who are true entrepreneurs, the fighter pilots, as I described them, who actually they're on a mission, they're trying to change the world, they're trying to change the way things are done. And that's where the real quantum growth will come from. It won't come from the inertia of the old businesses. From a government perspective, which is very much what this week is about, there's a happy answer here, though, because governments tend to own or control or regulate very large, largely inertia-driven aircraft carrier businesses, which have lots of customers and have established brands. And the young whippersnapper entrepreneur trying to change the world has no customers and no brand, but has clever people and life-changing technologies. And if the two can be brought together as a combination of policy and with some capital, then we, the Commonwealth, can fundamentally change the nature of business on the planet.
Amy, I mean, could this form of globalization that we're all talking about today, about this freer trade, this opening up, this dropping of barriers, could it promise a fairer world, do you think? I mean, let's be honest, globalization has had its critics.
I think globalization is largely misunderstood. Globalization is effectively just doing business in other places. What we need to do is evolve from that to an idea of sustainable globalization. That basically means creating mutual prosperity. So if you're doing business in a country like Nigeria, pick a local company that's operating transparently, that's paying its workers well, that's doing things in a way that is sustainable, as the UN defines sustainability. And don't do it because it's the morally right thing to do. Do it because it's now been proved beyond doubt that if you do that, you will make more money.
Mm-hmm. Rahul Merchandani. I mean, is it going to be fairer for India to have these freer barriers, or is it just going to be another way for perhaps the countries with more general wealth to impose upon cheap labor in a place like yours?
Oh, well, actually, India will benefit from lower tariffs. We have had issues where from Europe, when material comes into India, there are high tariffs. However, we are also very, very, very keen on propagating our own Make in India policies. The two really are complementary to each other, because the source of raw material could be from overseas, whereas the actually finishing the material happens in India, and that kind of becomes a great impetus to local business. So I think India would greatly benefit from these kind of free trade agreements. We've always been in the center of world trade and commerce, and I think it's a very beneficial development.
That's it for this edition of In the Balance. Thank you all to my guests here at Marlborough House in the heart of the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in the West End of London. My guests were Rahul Merchandani from India, Amy Jadasimi from Ladol in Lagos, Nigeria, Kenneth Alisa, Chairman of Restoration Partners, a merchant bank here in London, and Dr. Christian Cardona, Minister for the Economy in Malta. Thanks to you all for listening. We'll be back next week.